If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with the Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Positively Trek with me, Dan Gunther. And this is another comics episode. So joining me is the wonderful, the radiant, the bespocked Brandy Jackala. Brandy, how's it going?
Bespocked. I love that. Yes, I will accept that. I'm always bespocked.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me again, of course. And let me just hit my desk so that everything shakes. There you go.
Yay!
Little earthquake for you. So, we're all good.
Excellent. It's funny. I was watching the other day with some friends. We did a double feature, and I recommend everybody do this, by the way, of the original series episode Balance of Terror, and then the Strange New World season one finale, A Quality of Mercy.
Mm-hmm.
Back to back, you do not realize just how well they go together. But besides that, just you bumping the table reminded me there's this great camera move on the bridge where it starts at the helm and it pulls back and Kirk checks in with the helm and it pulls back further and Scotty comes into frame and Scotty's like, don't worry, sir. I've talked to the engine room. We'll get a little bit more out of the engines. But just before Scotty comes into frame, I think the cameraman like bumped into the railing or something, because the picture just very slightly goes boop, right as it stops.
Ooh, I'm going to have to go back and rewatch that.
I don't know. It was so fast. I don't know if it was my imagination, but I was like, did anyone else? No?
Okay. Well, I will watch it and I will let you know.
Excellent. But yeah, everybody watching or listening, do that double feature. It lines up really, really well. It's they did an amazing job with that Strange New Worlds episode, for sure.
It was really meticulous in the way they matched so much of the original. It was impressive.
Absolutely. But we are not here to talk about Strange New Worlds as much as I would like to, and hopefully we will be soon with new Strange New Worlds coming. But in the meantime, we are talking about the next two entries in the Lore War saga. So we have Star Trek Defiant number 27, which is part 4 of 5 of Lore War, and then Shax's Worst Day, which is kind of a little just side story for Lore War. It's not one of the 5 parts, but it's an additional story, which we'll talk about, because I feel like, well, we'll get there, but I feel like it should have been part 5 of 6, because it seems pretty integral to the overall story.
I agree completely.
Absolutely. There's things that happen that, like, you need to know.
Mm-hmm.
I think.
Anyway. I agree. I was thinking the same thing. I'm like, so this is a one shot, but it does, there's so many things in it.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So much so, like, I've read Star Trek number 32. I've read the final, and they even say, like, as seen in Shax's Worst Day. It's like, it's referring to things that happen that are very plot relevant. Anyway.
So why is it a one shot?
Yeah, anyway. It should be part and parcel of the whole thing. But
absolutely,
whatever.
It deserves to be.
But let's start by talking about Star Trek Defiant number 27 to start with. So once again, we'll just kind of go through fairly quickly the events of the comic and talk about it as we go. So to start out with, picking up where the last story left off, Sisko and his motley crew have met up with the Free Syndicate, which is, of course, Nymeera and Kira and Tasha and a bunch of these kind of freedom fighters. And we find out that Sisko has been designated the Incongruity by Lore, which I kind of like. You know, he's in our universe, he's the Sisko. In here, he's the Incongruity. I feel like that's a badge of honor in Lore's universe.
I think so. It's not a good badge of honor, but it is a badge of honor.
And there's a discussion here that I really like, and it's about the nature of this universe that's been created versus the correct one. And I kind of like that they had this discussion, because the people living in this universe, as messed up and totally incorrect as it is, as created by Lore, they've lived their whole lives here, and this is kind of all they've known. And it's interesting, I didn't think of it until the comic brought it up. There are several people who are alive in this universe that aren't in the correct one, right? So,
like
Tasha Yar, absolutely. So she's, of course, going to have very mixed feelings about resetting the universe to the one where she's, you know, been dead for a decade or so. And also Nymeera, who's told she's dead, and everybody thought she's dead, but she's actually alive in our universe. So I thought that was kind of interesting that, like, actually, no, she's alive. Just everybody thought she was dead.
Well, and that's the interesting thing is that, yes, this universe exists and there are people who are very comfortable with it, especially Beverly. She's a big naysayer about this entire thing. And at the same time, they're not really talking about how Lore can wipe them out at any second anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So their lives are forfeit no matter what they do. If they do nothing, he'll just start something else again. If they do something, they can break the cycle. But there are still some people that just aren't on board with that because they can't see the big picture. They can't see what Sisko sees. Yeah. And what we as the viewer see.
Yeah, absolutely. And apparently Lore has done this countless times already as well.
Yeah.
And kind of frequently is like, you know, oh, let's just start over again kind of thing. And the only thing keeping him from doing it this time around is Data appealing to his ego, apparently, which was interesting.
Well, he knows his brother well.
Yeah, for sure. Well, we also learn who the Minds are. And
yes. Oh my goodness.
We should have figured this one out, I think. Like, because they're all on the cover of this issue and I saw the cover, you know, weeks and weeks ago. Right.
Right.
One of them is an engineer, Scotty, that we knew about, and we figured B'Elanna was based on some of the clues. Yeah. So like, what do they have in common? It's four engineers who are the greatest minds, right? So we've got Scotty as the Alpha Quadrant mind, O'Brien as the Gamma Quadrant mind, Geordi LaForge as the Beta Quadrant mind, and B'Elanna Torres as the Delta Quadrant mind. So each of them is kind of taking computational load off of Data so he doesn't have to do all the computing for the galaxy, basically, and enacting Lore's plans. And also, like, the reason it's those four is because Lore wanted to torture people he knew. Like, Data makes the case for, you know, Robert Oppenheimer and Dr. Bruce Maddox and all of these various people. And Lore's like, no, I want people that I know so that I can torture them. It's just an added bonus. We do learn something in this that I was surprised by. So we had this prediction that the message that Shaxx sent to the Bajorans was fake, that he had actually, in the fight with Worf and Kalis, had come into contact with the sword and had his memory given back and all of this stuff. But that didn't happen the way we thought. He actually did manage to get those two in the brig and somehow not kill them as we expected that he would really want to do. And amazingly succeeded in overpowering both of them, probably, I guess, with a phaser. But at no point was he hit with the Bat'leth. So he is his old fascist, this universe Shaxx self.
Mm-hmm.
But in the course of this, he does try to execute both of them, manages to vaporize Kalis. So he's gone. That's it. However, he goes to kill Worf and he's going to do it poetically with the sword of Kalis. So he grabs the sword and of course suddenly remembers everything. And to get the rest of that story though, you have to read Shax's Worst Day, which we will do after this. So yeah. That's kind of where that story's left. I loved this. I didn't love Kalis dying, even though he was such a horrible villain earlier. He's really made some good strides for a Klingon god killer that he was. I think he'll be back somehow when everything resets itself.
Well, there you go. I was just going to say that. It's like this universe isn't real. I mean, it's real enough, but it's manufactured. It's not, it didn't come into being however universes come into being. I don't know. I'm not an astrophysicist or a quantum physicist. So
basically we get a little hint of the story to come here because we have this message sent by Lieutenant Barclay sending a distress call when Shax goes berserk, according to him. So just a little preview of things to come, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Sorry, Reg.
Yeah, he sounds like a bit of a wiener in this universe, too.
They could have done so much better, but it was the 80s when this character was created. And, you know, they just didn't have the understanding of neurodivergence that we have now. And it became the stereotype for that era of what a neurodivergent person is like. And I don't care for it.
And like, to be fair, I actually really appreciated his character and I liked some of the things they had to say with his character. And to a lot of the Barclay fans out there, I apologize for calling him a wiener. That is mostly based on the actor who plays him, who I do not respect in the slightest anymore. So
some of
that is bleeding into my perception of the character. But
Yep. Yeah. And that's okay. That's okay. Because this particular version of Barclay is definitely a wiener.
Yes, as they all are. They're all fascists. So So back to the Free Syndicate. They're meeting up with the Maquis Remnant. So the remainder of the Maquis who escaped the big battle with Starfleet, led by this Borgified Spock. And they kind of hatch this plan. They agree that they have to go after the Quadrant Mines. And this is also when Sato arrives with T'Lyr, who explains all about the Quadrant Mines. And, you know, they're going to be very important to this, giving the exposition and backstory as to what's going on and getting everybody back up to speed. But the plan is going to be to flip the mines against Lore. So to turn them against him. And by so doing, hopefully flip Data as well, is kind of their thinking here. So good plan, do you think?
It's the only plan they have. Mm-hmm. So good plan.
I think so. I think it's a good plan. I think Data might be flipped already, though.
Agree. I was just going to say it. You beat me to it. Thank you for that. So I absolutely agree that Data knows exactly what's going on and he's trying to help in the own, you know, in whatever way he can without Lore finding out and restarting the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Because, yeah, this is where we get what we talked about a little earlier, where Lore is frustrated. He wants to just end the universe and start again. But Data convinces him otherwise by, of course, appealing to his ego and his vanity, right? Mm-hmm. So I appreciated that. I almost wonder if Data was just kind of waiting for the right circumstances, the right universe to come about, where he's like, okay, now everything's in place. Now we can flip it back and restore everything. Which is interesting. I wonder just how many times this has happened.
Could be dozens, could be millions.
Mm-hmm.
No way to know.
I feel like Geordi in the conference lounge in the time loop episode, Cause and Effect. It's like, this could have happened a dozen times, 100 times. There's no way to tell.
Yeah, it turned out it had been days, or was it weeks that they were trapped in the
14 days, I think.
14 days,
couple clocks weeks, were off yeah. by, yeah.
Yeah. Which is funny because there's this one song, I can't remember who it's by. My husband is going to say, why can't you remember what that Basically, it's a band that really likes to sample Star Trek episodes, dialogue from Star Trek episodes. And there was one of them that starts with Worf talking about there is the theory of the Mobius. And it's just, and then it gets to the end of that sentence and it goes, when time becomes a loop, and it just keeps repeating and repeating and then kind of spirals into the beat of the song, and it's just kind of weird.
That sounds but really fun. Cool.
And there's another one that was that, I can't remember the name of the episode, where Riker is in a mental facility and he absolutely believes that he is not really in a mental facility.
Frame of mind.
Yeah, thank you. And, you know, it's basically, I'm surrounded by insanity, but I'm not insane. <It's> just, the first time I ever heard that song, I'm like, wait, what? There's Star Trek references here.
Oh, that's great. I have to check that out. That sounds great.
I'll ask Dave what songs they are. He'll find them for me in his vast library of knowledge and music.
Nice. Well, we've got Data coordinating the quadrant mines, basically, but he says not to activate any kind of defensive action. He tells them that Sisko and them are coming. Odds of separation remain low, but at the very least, there is hope, he says. So, yeah, it feels like he's been laying low and planning this for a long time.
Well, I thought that from the beginning, because... Mm-hmm. Data.
Yeah, right?
I know my data.
So Spock is going to go after Scotty. Hugh is going to go try and free LaForge. Paris, of course, is going for B'Elanna. And Alexander is going to go after O'Brien. So interesting. I don't know if those two ever interacted at any point in Star Trek. I don't think so. On screen, anyway. I don't think they ever did. But
no, not that I recall, because as we all know, Worf is a terrible father.
They did. Sorry, I just remembered the wedding episode of Deep Space Nine. They were all on the road to Kalhaya together. The Klingon version of a bachelor party, or so they thought.
I don't understand bachelor and bachelorette parties. I really just don't get it.
So I got in there with the reference before Patrick Carlin could email us to let me know Worf and Alexander, or Worf and Alexander, O'Brien and Alexander have actually interacted.
Yep, there we go. So, yay, shout out to Patrick.
Yeah, yay, Patrick. So Sisko is heading to the hub, but before all of them can head out, Worf arrives, having escaped thanks to Shax, and will be accompanying Sisko. And this is where we get this really wonderful reunion between Worf and Alexander. And Worf has still never been touched by the sword, interestingly. So he's doing all of this based on the knowledge of his son and the love of his son, trusting him that this is the right thing to do. He's the unchanged Worf. I kind of love that. I love that he never gets that, like, ultimate confirmation. He's just an honorable man, eventually.
Finally. Like, this is the first time I feel like he's actually acted like a father.
Absolutely. And that's it. That's the end of Star Trek Defiant number 27. So
goodbye so fast.
Yeah. But... A nice setup for going into what I'm sure is going to be an explosive finale. I really like how they're setting the pieces here and having, you know, each of the people go after the quadrant mines and all of that. I think this is a really fun story. Like, it feels like they're not leaving anything behind. Like, they're not, it's just like, let's go for broke and make the wildest Star Trek story we can. And I'm here for it. I'm digging this.
Yeah. I just one thing that occurred to me. I'm like, do Kira and Tasha have a thing going on?
it kind of seems like they might.
Kind of seems like they have a thing going on. I'm fine with that.
I'm completely fine with that.
I like it.
Absolutely.
They're people who can understand each other very easily.
Yeah, so, definitely. Yeah. I would have liked, and I mean, you know, it's only 5 issues. They can't get deep into it, but I would have liked a deeper exploration of some of these characters, but I know, you know, there's limited time. There's limited page space to do all of that, but I appreciate what they did. I like it doesn't feel thrown together like sometimes these alternate reality things can be. It feels like there's a definite kind of framework and plan, and it feels like they really worked hard to make this feel like a cohesive thing, this universe that Lore has created for the umpteenth time, right? So
yes, it's impressive actually keeping all of this sensical, I guess is the right word to use, because this could easily get very, very confusing and go completely off the rails, but it hasn't. They've really kept this story together very, very well from the start of it. And I'm looking forward to seeing how they finish it.
Artwork-wise, I also have to say a lot of my previous things that I've said about the artwork in this, they certainly hold true. There's some likenesses that are a lot stronger than others. I will say, though, however, the action sequences, again, are just so well done and so well laid out. Like the fight between Worf and Shax is incredible. And the close-ups on Shax's face during that fight, especially for a character that's previously mostly just been rendered as a, you know, 2D animation, fairly simplistic, they've really brought him to life. Like, that's exactly what I think Pawraith Shax would look like.
Agree.
Well, shall we take a brief break? And when we come back, move on to Shax's worst day.
Let's do that thing.
Positively Trek comes to you each week thanks to the efforts of our amazing Patreon members. If you'd like to help support the show, simply visit patreon.com/positivelytrek. Join at any level to get early access to ad-free episodes and exclusive content. For higher tiers, we offer shoutouts, associate producer credits, and more. We appreciate each and every one of our listeners. Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode. Live long and prosper. So Shax's best day, you might remember, was back during the Day of Blood. An Eisner Award-nominated comic. Did not win, unfortunately. I think it deserved to. I thought that was just a wonderful issue. But the writer of that, Ryan North, is back here to do Shax's worst day now. His typical style, the artist they have does the art in the Lower Decks style. And Ryan North's writing, we have these little interstitials at the bottom of, occasionally at the bottom of the page.
No, on almost every page.
Almost every page. Absolutely. Yeah. I love that. That's one of my favorite things. Recently, the Star Trek Lower Decks ongoing series has changed writers. So Ryan North wrote the first few, and now it's a new writer, Tim Sheridan. And it's very good. It's still very funny, but he doesn't do those little things at the bottom. And I miss those. I miss them incredibly.
They're so great. Those were some of the things that made me laugh out loud during this issue. And I mean, and I don't just mean a ha ha ha. I mean like a boisterous laugh where I laughed for several seconds and the cat looked at me strangely. So, yeah.
That's one of my favorite things of this too, because the first three pages are kind of a recap of what we saw happen in Defiant number 27, but done in Lower Deck style, where Kalis gets vaporized, Worf and Shax are about to fight, and Shax grabs the Bat'leth and remembers everything. And we see him do like a theatrical no, where he realizes he's a fascist. But the little interstitial bit at the bottom is, okay, that's the comic, everybody. Thanks for reading. See you next time for Shax's Most Average Day. I love that.
Oh, I really want that comic now.
Right? I kind of hope that someday, like, that's not a joke, we just get Shax's Most Average Day.
Well, the thing is, does Shax ever have an average day? I don't think so.
I don't think so. It would be still as action-packed and crazy. It would just be like half good, half bad. So by the end, he's kind of like,
that's
about me.
It's middling.
It's fine. We do find out that with Kalis's death, the Bat'leth no longer has the ability to reawaken people. Even though Kalis died before Shax touched it, but I guess it just had like one last little bit in it to thankfully give Shax's memory back. Because, yeah, he tosses it to one of the guards and he's like, cool, do you want it back now or what? Just doesn't do anything.
Yeah, that was Lieutenant Mick.
I think so, yeah.
And she was just very nonplussed about the whole thing.
Ensign Mick, I just put this together. I hadn't when I read this. But so Ensign Mick is an Antedian. And when the Antedians first showed up in Star Trek The Next Generation, one of them was a cameo by Mick Fleetwood.
I didn't remember that.
I just got that. Oh my God.
Okay, this writer is brilliant.
I love this so much.
So great.
So good.
The layers.
Oh my God. So it's at this moment, too, that Worf informs Shax that anyone killed here will be restored once the universe is reverted back. So that's good. That's what we suspected. That's what we'd hoped. How Worf knows this, I have no idea, because he doesn't even have an awareness that the universe has changed other than what he's been told. I don't recall anybody telling Worf this at any point, but it does free Shax to unleash mayhem of the highest order on everybody, consequence free. So that's good. But am I missing something? Like, how does Worf know that?
I'm going to say Worf doesn't know that, but he just wants to set Shax loose.
Okay. That's very much a possibility. The comic definitely takes it as though that is gospel, though, which, all right, that's good. I definitely hope that's the case. So Worf tasks Shax with the destruction of Starfleet. That's his job now. Do you think he's going to succeed? It's Shax. Yes, he's going to succeed.
Mm-hmm. He doesn't fail. Even when he gets killed, he doesn't fail.
Yeah. So we find out that Tendi and Rutherford of this universe serve on the Enterprise here. Shax's first attempt is to beam everybody into space, but he's thwarted in that. And then he uses the fire suppression system to suffocate the crew by telling the computer that everybody's head is on fire, except his lower body's on fire, giving him a personal force field.
Yeah. Okay. No, the funniest thing about seeing Tendi and Rutherford is Rutherford has a patch over his implant eye. Implant. What?
Oh my God. I love that.
I laughed at that for a good 30 seconds. And how he's still just so oakley-doakley sort of guy.
Such a cheerful fascist.
Cheerful fascist, definitely.
Good luck, sir. Democracies are for huge losers, and I hate them a bunch.
You can actually hear his voice.
Totally. Okay, so this first thing, and I mean, I know this is like a fun comic, but it feels like, and not in a bad way, it feels like the story is being told after the fact, and this has come up in a comic before, in a more serious way before, but in this one, it's more funny, where he's like, well, then I use this power and I do this and I overcome the thing. And it's like, he's kind of, he's like the little kid in the playground where they're playing, where it's like, bang, I shot you. Oh, but I had a personal force field, so you didn't. And then I shoot you. And just like, you've always got to come up with something that makes you succeed. The difference here is Shax is awesome enough that, yeah, he just did that.
Yeah, I basically, you know, whenever kids play games like that with me and they're like, oh, you're dead. And I'm like, thank you. And I leave.
Party pooper.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't like all the back and forth. It's just, it's immature. And of course, we were kids at the time, but it was just like, I've got better things to do. I got books to read. See you later.
Yeah. Shax, meanwhile, was, you know, I guess battling Cardassians as a kid. So he actually had to come up with all those ways to survive.
Yes, yes, he did.
But the Enterprise gets intercepted by 6 Starfleet ships. The ships are the Titan, the Cerritos, the Sun Tzu, the Chomsky, the Lore is Great, and the Lore is Great B.
I can't and laughing that, out loud.
And then my favorite, though, was the little thing at the bottom. And what's worse, the Galaxy class LSS Lore is Great dash Z dash 2 dash final brackets 1 dash final is on its way too. Because any of us who have done any kind of education has named a paper that or some project that, because, mm-hmm. Oh my God, that was funny. Yeah.
I had to read that like several times before I'm like, okay, how many versions? Add them up in my head. It was so funny.
So just good.
All of those little, I don't know what you would call them, footnotes, not really footnotes. Just every single one of them is gold.
The thing to get it to appear at the bottom of the list of versions. Zed, 2, final.
Yep. Oh,
I love it. So Shax engages the ships and he's on the Enterprise, so it's awesome. He manages to destroy 4 of the vessels, but the remaining ships are taking down the Enterprise. And Shax does this maneuver where he rams the Cerritos with the Enterprise, while at the same time using the phaser to cut a hole in the shields to beam through at the last second. As explained by this universe's Boimler, and he gets very caught up in explaining this, unfortunately, and is killed by Shax.
Yes, he had a very sinister Van Dyke going on his face. I liked it.
Yeah, almost just like as complicated as Tony Stark's. Like, it's mm-hmm. very, he's got a, yeah.
Yeah, that was, that's exactly what it was. It was a Tony Stark Van Dyke he had on his face.
Yeah, so he explains exactly what Shax did in gory detail. Oh no, I got too absorbed in fascinating science problems, which is what I do in this universe. Besides worshipping lore, that is, and fascism, as he's dying, and then dies with a bleh.
Oh. Yes, as all fascists should die, is with bleh.
To get rid of the Enterprise crew, he did the fire suppression thing and suffocated all of them. In this one, he puts each member into a static warp bubble, which, if you'll remember the episode of TNG, Remember Me, puts all of them in this bubble universe that keeps shrinking, and they, I guess, die because they don't have Wesley and the Traveler there to rescue them out of it. So all of them might be on a version of the ship where they keep losing their friends one by one for the next however long.
Until the warp bubble collapses, yeah.
Yeah. I think that's hilarious. Disturbing and hilarious.
Disturbing. When he first was talking about that, I'm like, what is he doing? And then I'm like, oh. And I love how they just kind of gloss over how all of, he's just murdering people left and right. But again, it's all going to get reset.
Yeah, it's all fine. So, it's consequence free. It's all good.
It's fine. It's fine. It's all fine. This was a construct. It wasn't a naturally occurring anything. This is basically just one giant holodeck to lore.
It's at this point that I hope that like the Prime Universe versions don't have memories. As much as I hate the reset button, can you imagine all of these people remembering their deaths?
No, thank you.
Yeesh.
I hope not.
So Shax uses the holodeck to trick Starfleet Command, basically heading to Earth for repairs, according to him. In the meantime, he's going to go through this list of possibilities of things he's researching to try and figure out how he can destroy all of Starfleet. And I love some of these ideas. So beam fascists out of physical phase so they pass through matter, then move the ship. That needs a molecular phase inverter. Never mind. So that would be what happened to Geordi and Ro, but for some reason they didn't phase through the ship and the floors. But anyway, he has the idea to maybe gain godlike powers from the galactic barrier and use them to destroy Starfleet. And his other thought is to Tuvix the entire crew. But he can't get that alien orchid. Boo.
He could make it one big giant lumpy Tuvix sort of thing again.
That's true. Yep. Just thank you to Lynn. So yeah, Shax gets to Earth, but Captain Liam Shaw intercepts the Cerritos.
I literally fist pumped.
I kind of love him in this too. Like, he's fascist Liam Shaw, but he's still just got that same like attitude. I love it.
Yeah, just this is just he's basically just done with everything. That's Liam Shaw in a nutshell. He's just done with everything.
And a nice little callback to season 3 of Picard. Fascist Captain Shaw is just some dipshit from fascist Chicago, later renamed Chicago.
Oh my goodness. It made me so happy to see him, not just see him in a comic, but see him in Lower Decks form. It just
absolutely
warmed my heart.
See, and it's stuff like this that makes me really sad that Lower Decks is done, because like, I'm sure he would have loved to come back as Shaw and voiced him in Lower Decks. Like, that would have been so great.
Find out some and not explain why he's alive.
Yeah.
Just absolutely. Not explain it.
He fought himself on the Black Mountain and faced the koala. It's fine. Yeah, that it's happens.
Yeah, the koala told him it wasn't his time as he was speaking backwards. And exactly. Liam Shaw happens to know what people are saying when they're speaking backwards. He trained himself how to do it because he knows everything. So, of course, he would know that the koala was telling him, dude, you got to go back. So there he is.
Absolutely.
There. I fixed it for you.
So, yeah, Shaw and his ship are opening fire on the Cerritos. Shax does this ruse to make them look more damaged than they are and sets a crash heading to San Francisco. And I just loved Shaw maintain fire and give chase, you know, just for funsies. But the Cerritos crashes down to San Francisco Bay, and using the shield, he skips the Cerritos across the bay and apparently makes the sounds as plink, 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 and then plunk before it finally explodes there. The little thing at the bottom, I don't know what to tell you. Those are simply the sounds this California-class starship made when it skipped across the water and then fell. Plink, 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 and then plunk. Honestly, I'm as surprised as you are.
I adore this.
This is so much fun. It's so ridiculous, but it's so great. But Shax gets vaporized as he leaps out of the Cerritos with his Batleth. So that's the end of Shax, unfortunately. Close. Yeah. He almost got there, but just couldn't do it in the end.
No, he's probably fighting himself on the Black Mountain again.
Yeah. But actually, Mike, you may want to take a look at this because there are hundreds of Cerritoses plummeting towards the Starfleet headquarters here. And apparently Shax took the lesson from the Voyager episode Deadlock, where the ship duplicated, and he just did it a whole bunch of times to the Cerritos. And each one of those Cerritoses has a Shax aboard. And they are all going to attack Starfleet. Oh, and also he apparently contacted Fluidic Space and has Species 8472 as backup. So, okay.
I was loving all of the Voyager references in this.
Yep. I was thinking of Rutherford, where he was like, oh, it's a crazy last minute, crazy solution. It's Voyager. What do you expect, right? Or something like that. I misquoted that, but
it's something. No, I know exactly what you mean. yeah. Now, if I remember, because I'm not good with episode titles, was the one Deadlock when Ensign Wildman had her baby and the baby died? And so we now have an alternate Harry Kim and an alternate baby?
Yep.
Okay. I thought that was the one, but I just wanted to be sure. Yeah, that episode was a brain breaker.
That's a good one. I really like that episode.
It is really good, but it's also a brain breaker. So
absolutely. Hey, fascist says arg. Shax is having too much fun. Because, yeah, he's duplicated himself and all the Bat'leths. He is just causing mayhem all over Starfleet headquarters, which turns out to be a bit of a distraction. Because what he's doing is using the prefix codes of the entire fleet to send a command to drop antimatter containment on every ship in Starfleet.
Creative. I mean, the creative things he comes up with in such little time, it's impressive. He's not just a security guy. He's not just a freedom fighter. He's not just a Bajoran. He is... he's all of these things. He's smart and he's strong and he's just, oh, I love him.
Oh, I just noticed. Oh my God. I just noticed a reference. I think it's to Shax's Best Day. Do you remember where he was like doing these moves and they all had is like Garrick and like they had the sound effect. He's like, oh, you didn't get to see the Harry Kim move. Shax, just as he dies here, I just realized Harry Kim. Mm-hmm. I didn't notice that.
I saw that immediately.
Oh my God.
So I'm like, it's a her. Wait a minute. Her Kim? No, this is Harry Kim. That's what he's doing.
Nope. So yeah, his final move here is to transmit the final prefix override to every Cerritos, which have all crashed there. And, basically, in this frame, looks like it splits the Earth in two.
Just breaks it open like a piggy bank.
Yep. So that would be, that's the end of Starfleet in Lore's universe, by the looks of it.
Fascist universe, yep.
Yeah. And Shax wakes up in what could be an afterlife, or it could be just his final thought as he dies. But he's... there with a ton of Shaxes who have all also just died. And it's awesome. There's a big eject the warp core button.
That is my favorite thing. The line, the long line of Shaxes waiting to go hit that button is just, there's so many little things in here too. Like there's a Targ chasing a Moopsie. How the Moopsie has not devoured everyone by now, I can't tell you. Just little things like that where you just look at it for a while and see all these little things. There's booths where they're handing out ice cream to the guys who are in line to press the warp core eject button. just all these different Shaxes doing different things.
I like except the little for that penguin. Line.
What?
I don't know what's up with the little penguin, but I love him.
I don't know either, but penguins are fantastic. So.
The one Shax in the kind of foreground just off to the right with the big sun hat petting the cat.
Yep.
Shax is just living his best life there. Or his best afterlife, I guess.
Indeed. I think there was a beach ball somewhere too, if I remember right.
Yep. There's a beach ball. There's a couple Shax playing Kalto, the Vulcan game. Oh, and there's one Shax just gazing lovingly at the security manual as he reads it.
Just so great. It's just so great. The little cutouts where they're putting their heads through and there's like Starfleet uniforms below.
Oh my God, I didn't even notice that. That's great.
Oh, such a feast for the eyes.
Oh, so much fun. So yeah, that's it. So this is what it looks like when the fascists lose, as Shax tells Shax. And he says, also, you killed a ton of people, but as previously established, they're all going to come back better. So, well done, buddy.
This exceeded my expectations. It was completely off its hinges.
Absolutely nuts.
And that's why I loved it, because it's like, okay, this universe is constructed. This universe isn't going to last. We all know that. We're going to go back to our normal universe. So let's just throw everything we can in. Let's just do everything. And how many references to other shows did they make? It was insane and yet completely coherent. And I don't know how he managed it. Absolute ridiculous gold. I love it.
Yeah. Ryan North is such a good writer for this. It's the Lower Decks series, which unfortunately he's not writing anymore, but like for this comic and also the previous Shax comic, I've recently been reading a lot of comics, and he's currently writing the Fantastic Four for Marvel, and it is so good. His writing is just incredible. So whenever I see Ryan North's name pop up now, I'm just like, okay, yep, I'm going to read this and I'm going to love it, I'm sure. Especially when he writes Lower Decks stuff, because it's clear he's a huge fan and he handles this so well. Like, I would say he's, you know, the only person who could write Lower Decks better than him is Mike McMahon at this point, and the other writers of the Lower Decks show. But his stories are so good.
They really, really are. It's like, when you find a writer like that, you just want to follow them wherever they go and hope that they land on some of your favorite things, which, you know, in the case of Star Trek Lower Decks, he did. I think the same thing about Gail Simone. And I would follow her anywhere. I would read anything that she writes. Doesn't matter what genre, doesn't matter what comic universe, don't care. If she wrote it, I'll read it.
Yeah, so, her based on your recommendation, my reading of her current run of The Uncanny X-Men is so good. I'm really enjoying that, for sure.
She made Gambit likable. After all these years, she made the comic book Gamble likable. Gambit, excuse me. I said Gamble. I meant Gambit. Leave it in. Don't edit that out. Don't edit that out. I own my mistakes. So Gambit. I meant Gambit. Which is funny because, you know, he does a lot of card stuff, card magic and stuff like that. So it's kind of like...
It's an understandable error.
Kind of a gambler to start with. Anyway, but sorry. Sorry. Sorry to everyone who loves X-Men. I have been a little out of commission with an illness, and I'm... You know, sometimes my brain doesn't fire correctly. So, yeah, Gambit is now likable. So go get that X-Men series, guys.
Absolutely. I'm also, I don't know off the top of my head who writes it, but The Exceptional X-Men as well, which is on right now. I'm loving that too.
It's a good time for X-Men.
The first issues, I was just like, holy crap, this is excellent. Kitty Pryde is kind of the main feature of that. I love
Kitty Pryde.
She's so good.
She's so good. Kitty Pryde is one of my husband's absolute favorites. So
nice. I'm a relative newcomer, so I'm learning about all of them. And
He has comics from the 80s. So
nice.
Yeah, I wish I had had a collection like that, but I was not allowed to get comic books when I was a kid.
I think my mom would have liked me to get into comic books when I was a kid, and I just never did. So I'm doing it in my 40s for some reason, but I'm enjoying the heck out of it.
It's a lot easier now, though. Mm-hmm. It's a lot easier now because you can find things.
Yeah.
And if your comic book shop doesn't have it and can't get it, there are other ways you can find it.
Yeah.
It's not like you have to you hit the pavement and start going from place to place just on the hope that they'll have this thing that you want.
Yeah, so, flipping through long boxes at comic conventions.
Yeah, there are people who still do that because every FanX I've been to has had multiple comic book stores there with their long boxes, and there's always the nerdy people over there going through all of them.
Absolutely. Well, that's sorry, I just glanced over at the comic again and saw the one Shax posing nude while everybody else draws him. I totally missed that. Anyway, that's it for Shax's Worst Day and Defiant number 27. So the next issue is Star Trek number 32, which is the finale of Lore War, part 5 of 5. And then Star Trek Omega, which wraps up the whole Star Trek and Star Trek Defiant stuff. And we'll do those two issues as our next comic episode after this. And that'll be a wrap on Lore War and sadly a wrap on the ongoing Star Trek and Star Trek Defiant series. But definitely not a wrap on Star Trek comics because there's still a lot more coming. And there's been no announcements yet, but I feel like there's going to be another kind of shared continuity thing that happens maybe post Nemesis or something, because all of these comics are leading up to Star Trek Nemesis. And then there's still a bunch of stuff after that. So yeah, it makes me think of right now, the Star Wars comics. They did a big run of interconnected comics set in between A New Hope and Empire Strikes Back. And then more recently, they did a big long run of a bunch of different titles between Empire and Return of the Jedi. And now they're going to do something after that. So Star Trek's kind of doing the same thing here. So it's kind of cool.
Yeah.
I hope. I don't know. But I hope that's what they're going to do.
Yeah, I agree. I'm less excited over Star Wars comics because they just keep settling in the same time period. And it's like, I don't need you to fill out any more in that time period. Give me stuff I've never seen.
Yeah.
But that's just my personal feeling about it. No disrespect to any of the writers or artists for the Star Wars comics. That was not my intent at all. I'm just, I feel the same way about the movies. It's like, I want to see something different.
That said, watch Andor if you haven't. Holy crap.
Yeah. So good. I have not finished it, so please don't tell me anything I don't want
to know. I won't. It's very good. You will want to watch Rogue One immediately after.
Good, because I have Rogue One. You know, I saw that in the theater. Actually, I saw that in the theater the day that Carrie Fisher passed away.
Oh, man. Yeah.
And I didn't, I knew going into it that she had passed away. Mm-hmm. And so at the very end, when you see Leia, I lost it.
I can imagine.
Completely lost it.
Absolutely. Oh.
Yeah. I was there with my mom and we were both just like passing tissue back and forth because, yeah, that's that was a strange, strange time to see that movie. I had no idea that those would connect in that way. So,
yeah, absolutely. Well, why don't you let our listeners and viewers know what you've got going on? Because last time you were on the show, we forgot to plug your podcast, Shield Podulation, which we must do because it is awesome.
Thank you. We have a really good time. Shield Podulation. It's my husband, Dave, and me together talking about a randomly chosen by Siri episode of Star Trek and or movie. The movies are in there as well. And thanks to you, Dan, again, of course, for the use of your spreadsheet, which I'm going to have to start adding to in July because Strange New Worlds season 3. And yeah. So, and you can all find out how I feel about the second part of that freaking cliffhanger that was supposed to be maybe a year and was ending up being like a lot longer. So, but anyway, so we don't edit the podcast, so everything you hear is exactly how it happened as it happened, and honestly, editing sucks, and this has been really fun for us. So we sometimes go off on tangents. We would do that even if we weren't editing. So it's just all in good fun. We most recently did Children of Time, which we had a lot of philosophical and ethical discussion in that one.
I'm excited. I haven't heard that one yet. Yeah. It's sitting on my player ready to go.
there's a lot of things because I remember the episode, but you know I'm terrible with titles. Mm-hmm. So Children of Time didn't say to me, oh, this is the one where they, crash. Well, not crash, but go to this planet. Thanks, Dax. This is all your fault. And
she was curious.
The funny thing is that Patrick was telling me that there was, the Destiny trilogy by David Mack, if I remember correctly. And there's a reference to that. So, yeah, have fun with that. It's on Apple Podcasts and Spotify and also on places like YouTube. And hear this in case you don't like all of those other platforms. And we have a great time. Also, I will be coming back with Boldly Go when Strange New World Season 3 happens. I am changing the format a bit. Basically, I don't want to edit that one either. So we're just going to take a note from Shield Podulation and just do it.
Nice.
And because it's very hard to schedule with so many people, I'm having Dave as my co-host for when I can't get a female to be there with me. Because honestly, he's a feminist in every way. And he's just like honorary female. So nice. Always honorary female there. So that's what's going on there. Find me on Blue Sky at Brandywine. Find me on Instagram at Brandyjackala if you want. And that's all of the things.
Our website is positivelytrek.com. I don't tell people to go there very often, but that's our website. Check it out. We also have a Blue Sky Positively Trek. We have an Instagram, which I've done nothing with for a very long time. I should maybe do that. But also, most importantly, we have a discussion group on Facebook. Just look up Positively Trek discussion group. You'll have to answer some questions, prove you're who you say you are, and we'll let you write in and all that good stuff. And yeah, subscribe to this podcast. I'm assuming you're already subscribed if you're listening, though. This is YouTube. If you're watching this on YouTube, subscribe to Kurt Ratz Productions as well. Hit that bell for notifications. What do YouTubers say? All that kind of stuff.
Smash that like button. I don't know.
Smash that like button.
Whatever. Yeah. I don't know Share what the kids this. Say.
I don't know. I feel gross now. Anyway, thank you everybody for watching and listening. And as always, stay positive. And, you know, treat fascists the way Shax does.
Yes.
Positively Trek is produced and edited by me, Dan Gunther, and co-produced by Barry DeFord on Treaty 8 territory, the home of the Beaver, Cree, Dene, and Métis people, whose histories, languages, and cultures we respect. We acknowledge the many First Nations, Métis, and Inuit who have lived in and cared for these lands for generations.
Are you ready for more independence as a financial advisor? Are you ready for more growth and control over your future? The Independent Registered Investment Advisor, or RIA, model might be right for you. There are many paths to independence, and Schwab Advisor Services has helped thousands of advisors make the move with confidence, from defining your vision to successfully transitioning your clients. Schwab helps you build your roadmap to independence. To find your path, start with Schwab Advisor Services at advisorservices.schwab.com/path today.